I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse.
Good day, sunshine.
Rain or shine, shorts or snowsuit.
It's Illinois. Weather happens. You depend on us to keep you informed. We depend on you for financial support to make that possible. Give to our member match fund today, and we'll use your dollars on April 15th to challenge others to help make great programs possible on WILL. Go to willpledge.org or call 217-244-9455.
Good day, sunshine.
WILL programs are made possible by Women's Health Practice and Dr. Suzanne Truppen at 2125 South Neal Street in Champaign. Women's Health Practice is a Health Alliance medical plan for State of Illinois employees and is accepting new patients. More information is available at 356-3736. Programs on WILL are made possible with support from Sinfonia de Camera, presenting Richard Strauss's Der Rosenkavalier at 7:30 p.m. on Friday, April 3rd at the Krannert Center. This concert version of the opera, directed by Nicholas DiVirgilio, features new and returning vocalists from around the world.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580 and FM 90.9 HD2. I'm Tom Rogers, sitting in for Celeste Quinn. And our technical director this afternoon is Jason Croft. He'll be on the phones as we take your calls about dog training and dog behavior. It's our monthly visit with Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm of the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. I am getting the organization title correct.
Yes,
I just wanted to make
correct.
Sure.
Yes.
So far,
as a rookie in the talk field, I have to make sure that these are all this is all correct. And
people say DTCCU.
The DTCCU, DTCCU.org is a, you have a
.net.
Website
.net,
and on that site you can find out when all your activities are, when the lessons are, how you sign up, and all that.
It's all there.
All right, we are yes,
it's on the internet. If you've heard of that,
the interwebs. Yes. We need to bring you in closer to the mic, apparently. So there you go. You can get all that information online and get contact numbers and all that. And your facilities are out north of Urbana, off Route 45.
And there's a map on there, and I believe there's a map on the new site, I think. When classes start, actually, we had orientation last night for our home companion classes, and all the classes will begin on Monday.
Sunday,
okay. Correct. Yeah, Sunday.
Home orientation.
Home companion.
Home companion. So what does that entail? What do you expect the dog to be
that
course?
That's beginning class.
Yeah.
So.
We used to call it beginning class, and now home companion was a nomenclature that we came up with quite a few years ago because we felt that it best defined what we were trying to achieve.
So this is, teaching the dog not to chew on things,
just to be a good
outside,
companion, walk nicely with and obey a few commands. And at the end of the home companion course, we offer the canine good citizenship test.
And that's like a standard?
Correct. It's offered by the American Kennel Club, and it's very achievable, and it's a noteworthy accomplishment for people that are starting out on this exciting adventure. So,
what does the dog have to do to get that that level of?
Actually, basic stuff. They have to walk at your side on a loose lead, not necessarily heeling, which is a specific position, but close by you and not pulling you. They have to walk same way amid a small crowd of people without jumping on them. The dog has to let you greet its handler without jumping on you as you're greeting. The dog has to let you pat it on the head and greet it without jumping on you. And
jumping is a no-no in any case.
Yeah, and the challenge there is some dogs are not friendly and they'll jump on you, but the real problem is the friendly dogs that they see you and they want to greet you.
That's
so they jump
part
up.
Of their nature, I guess, right? Maybe not.
Jumping up usually is taught inadvertently, and it has to be untaught, but that's what the course is for. The dog also learns to more or less sit on command, to go down on command, come when called, stay for a very short period of time. and to be in social isolation, which is to say they go off in a room with one of us for 3 minutes and they can't attack us or tear down the walls or
and
scream
greet another
or holler.
Dog in a socially
they have to greet
manner.
Another yeah greet mm-hmm. another dog actually not greet it
well but we walk call up, yeah walk yeah. We have a handler and a dog and the owner and the dog and they pass and shake hands and
express interest in each other, but mm-hmm. not necessarily.
Right. And, you know, basically when you look at these exercises, they come, it's one component. It's control.
Yeah.
Emotional control.
And
more
a lot
than
of it has
else.
To do with the handler as well as the dog.
Oh, sure.
It's basically what you have, the dog has to know to be a good citizen, to walk down the street without causing problems, to greet other dogs without causing problems, to have the handler greet people without the dog interfering.
We had an amazing success rate at the last. We offer at the end of each session, and the sessions are 9 weeks in length. And
yeah.
I believe we had nine, including orientation.
I don't know. You know, I just did this. So you'd think I'd know, but I don't.
It's 9 weeks, including orientation.
Yeah.
At any rate, we had, I think, was it 20? Three out of 25 dogs tested
quite
that
a few,
passed. It was
quite a few passed.
Very high.
Successful class.
Yes. Uh-huh.
You're doing something right. Mm-hmm. Well, if you have questions about either training your dog, what questions you have about your dog's behavior, things of that nature, give us a call, and Jim and Carol will be able to answer them, we hope. 333-9455 is our number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Outside the area, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. And one thing that I wanted to bring up as far as another event goes on, apparently Petstravaganza is coming up
April 25th.
Later this month in on the U of I campus. What's that all about?
Well, Petstravaganza, it started out as a small educational opportunity.
Uh-huh.
And over the – I can't remember what year this is, 5 or 6, 7?
It's 2009.
I can't, no, I'm. Oh, I'm sorry. I misspoke. How many years this has been going on? But all of your animal organizations within the community, and not just dog and cat, but reptile and equine and wildlife, all come together at the Stock Pavilion, and it's geared toward everyone, but targeted more towards children to teach them more about the animals that we live with every day mm-hmm. and humane education. We have the Champaign County Humane Society will be there. I don't know if we have a presence there that day or not. They do man trailing with bloodhounds. That you can pet a horse, and so many kids have never been up close and personal with a horse, and they have
kind of a daunting experience for
it can
know,
be
first
because
time.
They're really huge. Yeah. They have livestock there. They've got adoptable animals. It's geared towards educating children about the animals that we share this world with. And it's very successful.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, and actually, in the 240 segment of the Afternoon Magazine, I'll be interviewing a book author on, you know, a relationship between a kid and a dog. And, you know, that's one thing you – among the many, many, many billions of things you want to teach children is they're just growing up is how to relate to animals in a humane way. And
mm-hmm. I remember one year we had – I was running like – it was like – I think it was like a bingo game or something where the kids had to answer.
Keno.
What's no? The kids had to answer a question, and if they got it right, then they got a small prize, and they have little passport books, and they get them stamped, and they go to each site, and mm-hmm. it's really a terrific community event.
333-9455 or 800-222-9455. It's coming up on April 15th. It's at the Stock Pavilion.
It's the 25th.
Oh, 15th or 25th. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, the 25th. Right. And tomorrow is the Vet Med Open House.
Oh.
Which is always a great event as well.
And that's open to everybody, not
open
just
to the general
prospective
public.
Students mm-hmm. or anything like
that's
that.
That's correct.
What kinds of things do they have there?
Oh, my gosh. Everything because have you gone recently?
I haven't gone. I've attended and put on demonstrations.
Right.
Recently, but I haven't – because we're doing that, we don't get to go see
everything
I
think that
else.
We are doing – did they get something solidified for tomorrow?
I've been gone, so.
Okay, I know that we might have a presence there tomorrow, the dog training club, to do some dog things. But, you know, it's a tour of the small animal clinic, which is fascinating in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. Did they have a cow with the open stomach?
Yeah.
They still have that, huh?
Yeah. Fistula.
Ugh.
They have the cow. They have a tour through. They have a lot of horses there, a tour through all the horse areas. You get to look under the microscope at certain things that were interesting to me. It's a full-day event if you go. Mm-hmm. It's just
there's a lot to see. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's so well-organized and well-run.
Plus, they have demonstrations every so mm-hmm. often.
They do.
And
and that's all day tomorrow.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's easy to forget that that's sort of the animal emergency room for this area too. It's the sort
oh,
of the
not
trauma
just this
center.
Area.
One of
it's,
them, yeah.
it's yeah. It's yeah. People come from all over the state.
Uh-huh. All right, that's coming up this weekend, and that's at the mm-hmm. VetMed building, I guess, south mm-hmm. of Lincoln Avenue.
Lincoln and Hazelwood is yeah. the address.
All right, let us go to. We have a phone call. We have a phone call in line one in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I have a question about changing pack size and dynamics. Until last week, we were a three-dog family, and we put down one of our dogs. And we're now a two-dog family, and I'm just curious if you can tell me the kinds of adjustments that the pack is going to make now that we have lost one of the dogs. And I will hang up and listen off to you.
Before you do that, what kind of dogs do you still have?
They are all mixed breeds.
Have we talked to you before? You sound familiar.
This is Dana. I do know you.
Okay. Oh, hi, Dana. Who'd you lose?
We lost the oldest Milo.
Oh.
So we're adjusting, but I'm just curious what kinds of things we can expect from the other two during this time. Obviously, we can't explain to a dog what is going on, but they obviously notice that something is different. So you might want to talk about that a little bit. We have one who's 11 and one who's 3 remaining, and so I'm just curious.
Well, social order in dogs and in wolves is a little bit complicated because there's also a social order with us.
Right, because we are their pack mates as well as the dogs.
Yeah, the dogs may have their own social order, and when we come in, that order may switch around fairly profoundly. Mm-hmm. If she has an 11-year-old and a 3-year-old, I'm going to guess the 11, well, and then it depends on if they're male and female, because in the pack order, boys have their own pecking mm-hmm. order and the girls have their own pecking order. And if you have one of each, obviously, that's kind of a limited order. But and then there are other things like some dogs will have dominance in eating, but they won't have dominance in where they sleep. Usually, in my experience, the males defer to the females quite a bit.
Yeah, and I can't remember. I remember one of the dogs. She got a cute little black and white puppy, and I can't remember the other one. I might think of it.
Well, the only time that, in my experience, where the males don't give in to the females all that much is at feeding time. The males will jealously guard their food. In fact, they'll eat it just as fast as they can, and so no one else can get it.
But that's something you want to, you know, is that something you want, you try to train out, you know, food protection?
Well, we feed all the dogs separately. They can't get at
okay.
each other.
Okay.
But if you have only 2 or 3 dogs, you might feed them at the same time.
Right.
And one of the expressions of social hierarchy is who eats first and who eats what. So if you have the old grand dog who used to keep everybody in line and he, for one reason or another, goes away, especially the younger dog will start to say, well, I wonder how this other old guy, maybe I'm superior to him. And they might start pushing him a little bit, maybe pushing him out of the way when greeting, maybe going up to his food, maybe laying where he wants to lay, just little things like that can happen. And then it also depends on whether the animals are neutered.
Lots of variables in there.
Well, a neutered female, it really doesn't change the pecking order for the mm-hmm. girls, but a neutered male really, they're almost like a third sex. The girls don't like them because they smell like a girl and they already have their own. Well, I should put it differently.
Yeah, please do.
I think the dogs can smell the testosterone level.
Yeah.
And when the male is neutered, it goes way down. Mm-hmm. So I think this is pure speculation, by the way, boys and girls. But I think they can tell you're either a boy or you're not a boy.
Right.
And the not boys have their own pecking order, and the boys have their own pecking order. And then if you have a neutered male, they're kind of out over here someplace. They regard themselves as a male and in the male pecking order. The males don't really regard them that way, mm-hmm. and the females regard them as somebody that's trying to encroach on their territory. So we've had a lot of trouble with neutering males and then having the girls start to fight with them.
Now, what if they're – and this is something I've sort of thought about. I'm thinking, well, maybe I had one dog for many, many years and thought, you know, what if there were two dogs in the household? Well, what if you go down from two dogs to one dog? How does – you know, how does pack dynamics is one thing, but just there's grieving perhaps with one member of a multi-dog pack going away? Or
I believe in that 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you go to from two dogs to one, and especially if they've lived together for a long time,
right.
I mean, they're some dogs adjust perfectly fine.
Uh-huh.
I had a friend that lost one of her dogs, and the other remaining dog was content to just have everybody to herself. And then they just adopted another dog, and she's a little beagle. So beagles, I think, are pretty happy little characters despite whatever life throws them.
Mm-hmm.
So she did well as a one-dog family. She's doing great now with another companion. But it's my own opinion, and since Jim's free in sharing his, I think that it's nice for a dog to have a companion of his own species. As much as we try, we're not dogs.
And they know that.
And they know that. Uh-huh. And I think that they're emotionally more healthy, as long as they get along, obviously, to have their own companion.
Are there breeds that are more apt to, you know, not be one, you know, lone dogs or multi?
I think that's probably true,
yeah.
But I don't think anyone's ever studied it. The Malamutes are pretty unsentimental about
but they're,
companions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You mean one would mean they'd be more content to live a solitary life with just their family?
Right, as opposed to.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any
been.
I just can't believe, though, that that would be the case, because dogs are pack animals. Much as horses are herd animals, they do better when they're not confined all by themselves. If they have another. I have a friend that has horses, but she also has goats, because the goats like to be with the horses. And it's just, I think that's the way nature sometimes intended it to be. That doesn't mean you could have 40 dogs in your house.
Mm-hmm.
But having two or three, or having a cat and a dog, not the same species, but a companion nonetheless.
As long as they get along. And then
right.
that opens it up to another.
I think the only true, maybe, and then maybe that's not the case either, but like a bird, you don't see. I think it's nice when you have multiple birds in a cage, but you see canaries are usually alone. I don't know if they are happy that way, but birds, I think, might be more inclined to
breed
be more
specific.
Solitary.
Mm-hmm. Well, they, I think birds want to get along with their own, but the sweet singing of the birds is actually them screaming at each other for territory. So
it's true.
Yeah. Our music is their screaming.
Yeah, the cardinals every morning. That's what they're saying. This is
get out of here.
I stake this out.
That's interesting, because I've been waking up, you know, every morning and walking out to my garage every morning and seeing this cardinal on the tree branch,
mm-hmm.
just, you know, going on and on and on and on, and I didn't realize that that's why he's there and doing that, because
that's
here is my territory,
and they've got their mates. I see the same pair at the bird feeder every morning and every evening, and
I think cardinals. Well, we're talking about birds. I know virtually nothing, but
we know everything.
We may need to swing this back to dogs eventually. But
the cardinals I've seen are very pushy animals, and we have the bird feeder and everything. And when the cardinals land, everybody leaves.
It's the red. That's it. You know, they see a red bird and say,
"The cardinals look like jays of some kind, and jays seem to be fairly aggressive."
Going back to the dog,
we had a bird in the house yesterday.
Going back to
dogs. Robbie was a single dog for a while because I was showing him, and I didn't have time to get another dog. But I'm very involved with him, and we did a lot together, and we traveled on the weekends. And then when I got Andy, he was thrilled. Are you pretending to be a cardinal over there?
Yeah. It's a distant cardinal in the background.
He was, you know, thrilled. It's like, thank God you finally got me somebody to play with, you know. So
And so a lot of it has to do with, you know, how much human involvement, human interaction they have as well as...
Yeah, and that's really critical if you interact a lot with your family dog, and I mean a lot.
I don't think we've had only one dog since 1969.
Yeah. Wow. But most people
have. That's 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Oh, how depressing.
Your questions for dog training and dog behavior are welcome. 333-9455, 1-800-222-9455 for Carol Lindholm and Gene Keel from the Dog Training Club of Champaign-Urbana. One thing, we were talking about the VetMed Open House, and one thing that our producer, Harriet Williamson, gave me is a little article on pacemakers. I didn't realize. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of, you know, medical technology that's transferable to pets, but I didn't realize that in some cases vets are installing pacemakers in dogs and cats.
The strides in veterinary medicine are astonishing. So go to the open house tomorrow. We've got an MRI. I remember when we had one of the only...
The dog MRI.
Mm-hmm. Cat scans for...
Sorry about that.
I remember when we had that. But yeah, it's just phenomenal what they're able to do. It's very sophisticated. So,
and I would guess kind of costly.
Very. But, you know, it depends. A lot of people are very willing to pay whatever it takes to keep their companion with them as long as they can.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't begrudge them that at all. It's their decision. So, and others probably wish they could, but.
What about, you know, there is a lot of, I mean, now we're seeing commercials for pet insurance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, thoughts about that? I suppose, you know, if your dog is worth it, get it.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it covers any pre-existing conditions. I don't have it. I know people that do have it, and they're very content. I don't know how good it would be if you were facing $5,000 or $6,000 in cancer treatment or anything else, but I assume they're successful, so it must be working for people.
Yeah. Let's. We were talking earlier about the initial training classes that you guys offer at the Dog Training Club. And you have to have that as a prerequisite for some of the more advanced kinds of things you do. Go to talk about some of the next level courses that you go. Once you get that canine good citizen
award. I should
run
out to the car and get our succession sheet because we have a sheet.
It's a flowchart.
It's a flowchart, yeah. Exactly. And what areas you can branch off into. And what I strive to do as an instructor is to keep the people enthused so they want to go on and continue. There's just no end to what we're offering. We even had, we may resurrect it, we had a canine freestyle class.
What's that?
Dancing with your dog.
Yeah, if you can Google it, and there's a lot of stuff on YouTube.
There is one out there.
These are like organized competitions or what?
Oh, yeah. Yes, there is one out there. Jin, G-I-N, the Border Collie, that is phenomenal. And I tell you, I can't watch that without getting tears in my eyes. Because
how do you teach a dog to dance?
Well, that's what we were going to do this session. But there you have to have, if you do Google it, you have to work in concert with your dog. I mean, it's pretty remarkable to watch.
Well, I was saying years and years ago, I think in the early 80s, the club had some sort of social evening. The dog training club had a social evening, and we did square dancing with the dogs. And I thought that was a lot of fun. It was, he had dogs that didn't know how to dance.
Because dogs love country music.
They like to do-si-do.
Yeah.
And the handlers really didn't know how to square dance. And
We're not exactly the square dancing capital of the world, are
no,
we?
No, but everybody had a great time.
Well, you're in the country. You're in something that resembles a barn, so.
We weren't there then.
You have your own Saturday night hoedown every weekend.
I thought that would have been fun. That isn't what freestyle is. Freestyle is fairly...
It's very orchestrated.
Ballroom dancing for dogs? Or
the difference between Dancing with the Stars and the Bolshoi Ballet, I would say.
But no, we
of course were the Dancing with the Stars.
But the canine freestyle, it's been around now for quite a bit. It's just not as well known as some of the other activities that you don't. There's no AKC recognition of that as such.
Do you see that down the line? Is it going to get serious eventually? Or
well, the people that do it now are very serious. Yeah.
It's fairly advanced training the way they do it.
What do they have to? I mean. What does it entail? I mean, you don't teach a dog rhythm, or do you?
Well, first of all, they're not on a leash.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
the dog kind of walks in zigs and zags, and the handler steps over them. They'll turn.
So it's
to
like
the,
agility training, I guess.
It's very, a little bit. They'll turn to the left, and the dog circles to the right. The dog goes down and crawls while the handler jumps over them, and the handler may do backflips and over the dog. Mm-hmm. So it's not for old folks like me. It's
so you need to teach the human about this.
Yeah,
as well.
The better the human is at dancing, the better the team is looking. But the dog, if you watch the dog, they're really not doing anything that complicated.
Uh-huh.
They're just doing it in time with the handler.
And it's well rehearsed.
And you got to teach them to watch out for what the human is doing.
Oh, yes. In that respect, yes, it's much like agility, where the dog does exactly what the handler, and they work as a team, and that's what it's all about. It's teamwork.
And, I mean, well, just about any dog obedience thing is a team effort.
Absolutely.
Well, that's what I said last night. I said
I didn't hear you last night.
You were yakking away, interfering with my speech. That's why I kept yelling at her. Hey, Carol, would you get
fetch
me a lead?
Him things.
Yeah, so she would be quiet.
That's the nice thing about our organization, though. And I told my new class that last night that we're all friends. I mean, we're all there. It doesn't matter what your professional life is. Personal life, you're all there because you love dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got some great friendships.
Well, that's what
years.
I said to everybody. See, if you'd been listening.
Oh, then I just repeated it.
Exactly.
Is there a little competitive pressure, though? You know, my dog is training better than your dog?
No, I don't believe that occurs there. Yeah. I really don't. Not in that venue. Now, when you go out and compete against others from outside our organization, you may find that. But within our organization, I think we all want each one of us to succeed in whatever sport you've chosen.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you feel that way?
Yeah.
I'm being really honest.
I agree, yes. There are people who, for whom this is a way of life, a job, and they're extremely serious about it, and they devote their entire lives to training the dogs and trying to win as much as they can, take high in trial and high combined as much as they can. But in the context of obedience competition or agility competition, there are so many levels that you can compete at,
right,
down to just competing with yourself, trying to get your dog a title. And as we say, in order to get a leg, you have to get 3 legs for most titles, and you have to get 170 points for each leg. And we always say, what do you call a dog that got 3 170s? And you say companion dog or an agility dog.
Uh-huh.
It's like, what do you call somebody who gets out of law school and gets all C's? You call them a lawyer. How about a doctor that flunks every year? They're a doctor.
Nobody remembers that. And I remember the first with Hulky, he didn't like to show.
Mm-hmm.
He was difficult. He found it rather frightening, I think. But I showed him to get his CD, which is your first title, Companion Dog.
Companion Dog, yeah.
And we were at a Golden Retriever specialty in St. Louis, and I think his score was 172. And I was just mortified because I knew he was capable of doing better than that, and I was. But you know what? When all was said and done, nobody cared.
You still got the
title. We still got
the leg
it.
And got the title.
Yeah,
his title.
Yeah, and that's all that really mattered.
How much of it is owner or handler? How much of it is dog? How much natural talent? I mean, how variable are dogs? Are they in their natural talent to perform these tasks?
It's still a team. You see the handlers that do the best are very good at selecting dogs for what they do. And in fact, I'm thinking of at least one top winning person nationally that literally would go through dog after dog. And he'd get a dog that would take high in trial half the time. And that's not what he wanted. So he'd go to the next, he'd train another dog. He wanted a dog that would take high in trial 80% of the time. And in consequence, he had some very good working dogs that were capable of high in trial very often that just weren't good enough for him.
Uh-huh.
Nobody in our club is like that.
No,
that's
rather
nuts. That's absolutely nuts.
And those kinds of things kind of it doesn't appeal to me.
Yeah. We are waiting for your call, 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. We can answer your questions about dog training, dog behavior. If your dog's presenting any specific problems or you're just curious about how dogs act the way they act, give us a call and Jim and Carol will be able to answer those questions. Have either of you shown at or been to Westminster?
Well, Robin went to Westminster. Uh-huh. We had a dog that was, I think he was number 4 in the country, and they invite the top 5. He might have been number 5.
Uh-huh.
That was?
Ross.
Yeah.
And so Robin never had been to Westminster, and she got an invitation, and some friends of ours were going, so she left me at home with the dogs, and she went with Ross to New York, showed him, and didn't do anything, but it was. She said, "I'll never go back," but it was a real experience. The best part of it, they got there at like 5 in the morning, and there were the local news, the local NBC News, you know, Today Show, mm-hmm. interviewed her.
Wow.
And Ross, and the president of the Westminster Club. And the guy, the news reporter, was nice enough. He really liked Ross. Mm-hmm. He made a copy of the interview and mailed it to us. So we have a copy of Robin on local New York TV, which is a big venue.
But the but the reason I bring it up is because I noticed, and I don't know whether you're here since the last Westminster, but the grand champion this year was a dog that's 10 years old. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Usually they're not that old, are they?
No.
Not even near that.
Yeah,
it was a Sussex
Spaniel.
Sussex, and I think he'd been retired,
uh-huh.
and ill or something. And
oh, he'd been ill a few years ago, and he was retired. And then the owner handler entered his son, and then decided they might as well enter the father as well. And the rest was history.
So old dogs are not past their prime.
No, definitely. You know, and if you pay attention, they'll give the age of the dogs. And they're not all 1 or 2 or 3 years old. Mm-hmm. And I think that's good because when you see a dog that's 6 or 7 and you're thinking about that breed and you're thinking maybe that line, and then you've got a good idea of that dog's health and temperament and before you actually go ahead and
so maybe there's like a conscious effort on judges to say, you know, maybe we should be picking older dogs.
No, I don't believe that.
No.
I don't think
most
that.
Judges really don't. Some judges will ask the age of the dog,
so mm-hmm. they don't know generally.
But yeah, they're not allowed to see the.
No, they probably they
the
may
book,
have seen the dogs before.
Okay.
They may have judged them before, right. But no, they can't. They don't know anything about the dog before it comes in the ring.
Sometimes they'll ask the age if they're considering the dog and another dog, and they want to know who's older.
Right. Let's take a call on line 1 in Brazil, Indiana. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I hope your guest can help me. I have a 9-year-old chocolate lab, and she's been very well behaved, but now she has started digging, and she's digging up my yard.
I wonder if she's looking for something.
We're all looking for something.
But when I move her, she does it again. And maybe she's dug in 4 separate places, and our vet said, oh, she's bored. Well, at 9 years old, you get bored, and then he suggested something else, but we didn't think that was it either.
What was the other suggestion?
I can't recall what it was, but it was something kind of silly.
How recently did she start digging?
In the last half year.
Did you move or anything?
Nope. No, I did not.
Did you build a new chicken facility, or did you change the property in any way?
No, I don't think so.
I wonder if she found like a little vole or something out in the yard.
Have geese been flying in? Or?
No.
Well, we've had geese landing in our pond recently.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, no. We move her where we stake her out, and she digs again. So she's dug up my flowers. Hmm. She's dug just plain grass. She's dug in mulch. And I just can't figure it out, but I'm losing my patience.
Well, you know, there's one little theory, and you might want to ask your vet about this, that dogs will dig if their nails are too long.
Huh.
So, which is pretty intriguing to me, but apparently it's true. So you might want to take her in and have her nails clipped and just make sure that they're not too long, but the digging sometimes They don't like their nails long either, by the way, so.
So you don't know anything that makes a dog dig.
Well, boredom is usually the number one reason.
I'm going to go with boredom here.
Or anxiety. Has she always been staked out?
She has a pen where she isn't tied up, but she is an outside dog. But when we let her out of the pen, then we put her on the clothesline, and she can move about, and she has toys. So we just can't figure this out at all.
Well,
there are toys, and what are they called?
Kongs.
Kongs. They're kind of
heavy rubber.
Heavy rubber, and you put food in them.
Ah.
And then the dog plays with it, and sooner or later a piece of food falls out. And those people have had good success.
Oh, yeah, they're highly successful. The clothesline, is she tied so she can move back and forth? Is it on a line?
Yes.
Or is she tied to a stationary object?
No, she can go back and forth on the clothesline. But then we move her from that also and hook her on a porch post and then hook her on the picnic table. And so she has different areas that she has access to, but she's digging in every one of them.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try the food ball. She has one of those balls that you chew on and it squeaks.
Yeah.
She likes that. But
and next time you go to the vet, see if she can have her nails just trimmed a bit, if that might be the reason. Otherwise, I'm going to have to say that she is bored. And just because she's nine doesn't mean that she can. I get bored, too.
Me too.
You don't dig, though.
All right.
No.
Pardon?
Thank you for talking to me.
Oh, you're welcome.
Well, thanks for your call. And one thing, she did mention that the dog was digging everywhere, not just like along the fence line or anything like that. I was wondering, you mentioned, you know, maybe sometimes they dig to see what's on the other side of the fence. Maybe it's something we can't see and they smell. I don't know.
Well, dogs, we forget, are wolves, and wolves are den dwellers. They don't live, you know, they sleep underground. They have their puppies underground. And the dog's paws and claws are meant for digging.
Mm-hmm.
Cats' claws are meant for killing. But dogs run, and they use their teeth for bringing down prey. And they use their nails and their claws for digging. And they'll dig a den, or they'll dig for food or anything like that. And the dog claws are really very efficient at digging. They're very powerful. They can go through pretty hard
ground. Especially your little terriers.
Yeah. So
mine dig sometimes. And
all dogs dig. Yeah. It's just like on our property, you know, we have large areas and we don't care if they dig or not. Yeah. So go ahead and dig.
Speaking from experience, yes, a backyard where you don't want to play volleyball back there, because you're gonna find one of those holes in a bad way.
No, I'm not happy if they dig up my hosta or get in my perennial bed, and I just put that little short fencing, maybe 18 inches in height, around the areas, and that's all I have to do. I mean, I don't do. They just, if there's any kind of impediment, it's like, forget it. It's not worth it. So.
Well, there's an old trick. If the dog keeps digging in the same place, you can take some of its droppings and put it in that area, and they'll stop digging in that area. The problem is once it dries out, they're back.
But they just stay away. They know to stay away from that area.
Yeah, well, they find it unpleasant digging in their own poop.
Yeah, so. And this dog seems to be digging indiscriminately, so.
So it's not necessarily, I mean, it's not trying to get out of the yard, obviously.
No,
and it's not.
It's self-rewarding.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she's getting something out of doing
it. Especially if she has long nails. And this is, again, unscientific, but I've noticed the older dogs, their nails seem to grow more. Now, that may be because they exercise
that's exactly why.
But normally, just normal activity will keep those nails down. You don't have to trim them. But as they get older and they don't move around as much, the nails start getting longer and longer.
That's probably one of the toughest things for a dog trainer to have to work with is, you know, if you don't really know why the dog is digging.
No, you can guess. And to me, you know, that she just started doing this in the last 6 months, it's either something that's a neurological thing. It could be early old age dementia. Why go that far? It could be just the nails.
Yeah, and the first thing we look for is some change in the dog's life.
Something obvious.
Somebody died, somebody moved in, a baby was born, they built a new chicken hutch, you know, something changed. And the dog then started doing this.
It's like an anxious behavior.
So lacking that, you know, what's left?
Right.
Well, digging is not unusual for dogs. And if, but if the dog hadn't been digging for 9 years and now started, probably it's boredom.
333-9455, 1-800-222-9455. Your questions about dog behavior and dog training are still welcome for Carol Lindholm and Jim Keel. One thing, you know, talking about anxiety in dogs, are we seeing more often where prescriptions are being given to dogs
for
a long time?
10 years.
How is it getting more prevalent at all, or?
I don't think so.
No, I think that
it's more prevalent because we
didn't
in the
have
past
anything.
We didn't have it.
Yeah,
it's a resource that if I felt that I needed it, I would certainly be grateful to have the opportunity. For me too.
Okay, let's go to line one in Urbana. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Yes, I just had one comment about the previous caller's problem with the digging that you folks might not have thought of or addressed. I have a small terrier and. He didn't really have an opportunity to dig for the first couple, 3 years of his life. And then at some point we went to a lake house and he discovered that he could dig in the sand around the edge of the water. And now he likes to dig. I mean, he doesn't particularly dig up the yard, but if he takes a notion, I think he's just discovered that that's something he can do and he really enjoys it.
Mm-hmm. It's self-rewarding, and you might be right in this case as well.
Yeah. Also... I had one question about separations anxiety. If my mother's dog is a small mixed wire hair terrier, and it seems to really get anxious when she leaves the house, even if someone else is there.
What does it do?
It goes to a chair next to the window where it can look out, where you know, see her car or the driveway, mm-hmm. and just barks a lot.
Ooh.
So
well, we were talking about
other sort of. Anxiety issues. I mean, he'll chew his skin in the summer. You know, it's a little bit of a flea allergy and stuff like that, but then he gets into it and doesn't stop him. I'm wondering if there's anything short of medication what, you know, might be.
You know, they've got, and I was just reading about these again the other day because I was a little skeptical, but they do have these, it's like a Glade plug-in, but it emits pheromones.
Okay.
And I've talked to people that have used them, and they found them successful. And the only reason I say I'm skeptical is because sometimes you can see a result that you're hoping to see. But they must work because
what
they
kind
sell
of pheromones?
Them. They're calming. I don't know what kind of pheromone it would be. There's something in there that's calming to the dog. And cats, they work for cats.
Do you get them through the vet? Or
no, you can buy them at any pet supply store.
Okay.
They're not inexpensive, but, you know, if they work.
Yeah.
My dogs sit and look out the window when I leave, and it makes me sad, but they don't bark. They just sit there.
Okay. So she might could put it in that one area.
Yeah. It's worth a try.
Yep.
I mean, something else I've heard of, but I hadn't thought of it, was that I've heard about these sort of no-barking collars that when they bark, it emits like citronella or something.
Right.
So it's not very pleasant. But
No, but that's better than the other collars.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. I mean, it's a... you know, she'd mention it to me, and when I was down there recently, I was doing work, and she would leave the house, and I'd be inside the same room working on something, and the dog would go over there and start doing that. So it's not like it's anyone. I mean, it's just a specific person, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So great. We'll give that a try. I appreciate it.
Excellent.
Thanks a lot.
And thanks for your call. Let's head right now to a cell phone on line three. Good afternoon.
Hi. I have a question. I have a very pleasant golden retriever. Who does well in the car, but next week I'm going to be driving with him to California. And so I was wondering if there were any tips you had for long car rides.
Don't let him drive.
Tip number one.
Okay, so I was just talking about the pheromones.
Yeah.
And they sell these that you know, the you put it in their water, the little tablet.
Uh-huh.
And because it was a couple that was moving to California, and they were taking the two Goldens with them that did well on short trips but not well on long trips. But unfortunately, I don't know their name or where they moved to. I couldn't call them and ask how it worked. So.
Right, yeah. Well, he's fine. I've taken him to Rock Island a few times, so he'll do fine on, you know, a 3.5-hour drive. But, you know, this is going to be 8 hours every day for 3.5 days.
No, just get him out and exercise him every 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, I drove to Sacramento in 2002. alone. Robin flew. There was a dog show out there.
Right.
I took seven dogs. And
wow.
Yeah, it was, and one of them came into heat after I crossed the Mississippi. So it was not a pleasant time. But are you driving alone?
Yes, I am.
It's a good idea and a good excuse to stop. You really should stop every few hours just for yourself.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Because you know, if you're driving 8 hours a day, that's like a job. And,
yeah.
You know, you get zoned out, and I found myself getting zoned out. So I'd stop, exercise the dogs, and it was a good way to get the blood moving.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's just for your own safety. I don't think if the dog will go to Rock Island with no trouble, I don't think he's, you know, time doesn't mean all that much to a dog, and he'll probably sleep, or she'll probably sleep most of the way anyway.
Okay.
Make sure you have a crate.
No, I do not have a crate, but he never bounces around the car. He always just lies down.
Yeah, but that's not what we mean. I mean, it's for his safety. If you have to slam on your brakes, you have to think about this. If you slam on the brakes,
now,
he's still moving.
How about those harness things?
People use those.
Those little doggy seat belts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
People use those and make sure that he can lie down.
Yeah.
That he's not going to be seated the entire 8 hours or four hours.
No.
But yeah.
He's going to lie down. But yeah, one of those harness belts is what I was thinking of using.
All right.
Okay, thank you so much.
And thanks for your call. And that will do it for our monthly visit with the dog training experts, Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm. And thanks again for joining us this month. We will see you again next month with Celeste Quinn. And we'll get some more calls next time, too.
We still had some.
We had a whole bunch of calls in the last 5 minutes.
I know.
So next time, if you want to call and get your questions in on any subject, call at 10 after and not 10 till. But we thank those who called in anyway.
And go to Vet Med tomorrow.
Go to the Vet Med open house. Yes, it will be a great day. And you get to learn
all about it. And Petstravaganza on the
25th. Petstravaganza coming up on the 25th. Don't know what the weather's going to be like there, but that's at the Stock Pavilion.
Oh, that's the first dog show at Decatur that same weekend.
Ah, so you can have a whole dog-oriented weekend in that case. All right. Well, thanks for joining us again.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It is 7 minutes before 2 o'clock. Settlement prices are now in. And with the numbers from the Board of Trade, here's AM 580's Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much. Let's take a look at those numbers, Tom, as they settled there in Chicago. Wheat futures gained 13 cents today. A settlement price at 563.5, the high at 65, the low at 46. The May contract and the soft red winter wheat up 13 cents at $5.63.5. July, the harvest month, 577, the top, the bottom at 58. A settlement price at 575.75, up 13. In September, $6.01, the high, the low at 584.75. Settlement price at $6.50, up 13. 13 and a quarter. December wheat, 624, the high, the low at 606, settlement at 622.5, up 12 cents on the day. And the March contract for 2010, a settlement at 637, up 12 for the afternoon. In Kansas City, July wheat there for the hard red, up 16 cents at $6.17.75. The nearby or old crop wheat for the hard red winter wheat at 607.5, up 6.5 cents. Rather up 16 cents. From the corn pit back in Chicago, a 2 cent gain for the day, 405 at the high, the low at 397.5 for that lead option. Settled the May contract at $4.45, up 2 in the May corn. July futures, 415 the high, the low at 407.75. Settlement price at 414.75, up 2 in September, 424 the high. The low at 17, settlement price at $4.23.5, a penny and a half higher. December contract, 435.75, the high, the low at 428.75, settlement price at $4.35.5, up a penny and 3/4 for the December new crop harvest month corn. March contract, 2010, 446.75, the top, the bottom at 440, settled up a penny and a half at 446.75 for the March 2010 corn contract. May oat futures, $2 the high, the low at $1.96.25, settlement price a penny above, below the low, or rather below the high, $1.99. The settlement price a penny and a half higher for the day for the May oats. July up 1.5 as well at $2.08.5 a bushel. From the soy complex, nearby May beans on the day, 9.97.5 the high, the low at 72. Settlement price at 9.95.5, 18.5 higher. July 9.97 the high, the low at 9.72. Settlement price at $9.95 a bushel, up 18.25. And the August beans a 9.78 1/4 top, bottom at 59. The August contract settled at 9.76 3/4, up 14 3/4. September futures, 9.46 3/4, the high, the low at 9.29. Settlement price at 9.46 1/4, up 12 3/4. New crop November soybeans, futures there at 9.24 1/2 top, bottom at $9.07 1/2. November beans settled $9.23 1/4, up 7 3/4 cents. The January contract up 7 1/2 at 9.32. May bean meal futures 306.20, the high, the low at 297.60. Settlement price at $306, up $8.60. July at 303, up $8.30. May bean oil at 35.38 top, bottom at 34.65. Settled 35.32, up 22. And July bean oil 35.64, the high, the low at 34.88. July bean oil settled 35.58, up 20 cents on the afternoon. I'll return at 6 after the hour of 2 o'clock Central Time, just a little less than 10 minutes away now, when we'll talk with Mike Zuzolo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
On the Chicago Mercantile Exchange livestock side today, the April live cattle contract had a high price of 86.10, a low of 85.20. The settlement price just off the high, 86.05. That was up 87.5 cents. The June contract had a high of 84.20, the low 83.15. Settlement price 84.17.5. That was up 1.17.5. The August contract, the high 85 even, the low 84.10. Settlement price 84.80 rather. That was up 82.5. And the October contract had a high of 88.60, a low of 87.70, and the settlement price 88.52.5, up 87.5. April feeder cattle had a high today of 95.65, the low 94.95, settlement at 95.40, up 92.5. May had a high of 96.90, the low 95.95, settlement at 96.70, up 105. August had a high of 98.90, the low 98 even, settled at 98.75, up 117.5. And September feeders had a high of 99.75, the low 98.75, and settled at 99.70, just off the high, up 1 even. It was an update also on the hog market. The April lean hog contract had a high of 60.30, the low 59.65. Settlement price 60.27.5. That was up 60. May lean hogs had a high of 74.30, the low 71.85. Settlement 73.90, up 202.5. June had a high of 73.70, the low 72.25, settled at 73.65, up 155. July lean hogs 74.35, the high, the low 73.30, and the settlement 74.27.5, up 112.5. May pork bellies had a high of 88.85, the low 87.60, settled at 88.82.5, up 102.5. And July had a high of 87.30, the low 85.65. 85.65 was also the settlement price. It was up 105 on the day. And those are the numbers from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. It's 1 minute before 2 o'clock at WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana. I'm Tom Rogers. Jason Croft is our technical director this afternoon. Coming up in the 2 o'clock hour after the closing market report, I'll have an interview with Megan Hill and Susan Gronke. They're an Illinois author and photographer who put together a book on the relationship between kids and pets, namely one boy and one dog called Nico and Lola. We'll talk about their experience in writing that book and what they mean to put forward to kids in that book. Coming up in the 2 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, about 2:45 this afternoon. Our forecast from meteorologist Ed Kieser for the rest of the day today. Look for the clouds to start moving away. They've already started. We're going to see mostly sunny skies towards sunset and a high of 52 this afternoon. Winds in the northwest at 10 to 20 miles an hour. For tonight, clear and cool with scattered frost forming toward daybreak. The overnight low 32.